invited, obviously, to agree. But that isn't enough.
So, do we have some questions for Julie?
Well, I'll start off.
Can I sit down? No, I want to see.
Well, I'm interested in a sort of crossover between real sheep and fictitious sheep.
Sure.
I mean, on one hand, you've got in some form of pastoral tradition the presence of a figure like Gabriel Oak, whose sheep are all run mad and go off the cliff and kill themselves.
Right.
And those are, so to speak, real sheep in contrast to the sheep who are just ornamental figurines in a great deal of early modern pastoral poetry. And I think you can move between those without distinguishing. Now, I wondered if you'd comment on that.
Right. I mean, I think your question goes to the extent to which, in reading pastoral, you can actually reconnect to actual shepherding practices. And there's a wonderful moment in Pepys' diary where Pepys and someone or other are out for a ride in the country, and they encounter a flock of sheep, and it's the first time Pepys has actually seen sheep. And, I'm telling the story. It's one of the times Pepys has seen sheep. And he leaps out of the carriage and runs over because it's sheep. And he writes this sort of long, sort of very sort of this is an encomium to the experience. And so there is and that is actually one of the ways in which the sort of what you're talking about, the less fashionable end of pastoral, ends up being reclaimed as access to actual sheep raising practices. And that's what ethology, I mean, in other words, that if you are, say, an animal behaviorist or someone like Phil Morale, then that becomes quite important because says the shepherds knew the faces of their sheep. That was one of the ways in which they would actually, a good shepherd knows his sheep. And I'm not trying to necessarily, which immediately becomes translated into an important set of advice for a parish priest. In other words, that there's a very real crossover between actual shepherding practices in the country, and human shepherding practices. In part, this paper is responding to the denigration of pastoral as retreat and return, as an idealization of the landscape, and in terms of trying to sort of pry open that set of metaphors to something else. I'm not sure that I want to become overly sentimental about, in other words, semi-realistic portrayals, not of sheep, but of sheep in their interactions with human persons, sort of sheep conscripted to human needs. You're not getting, in quotations, access to real sheep. And I'm not sure I necessarily would want access to real sheep in that sense. In those practices, there's a sort of minor literature of people who have turned sheep farmer. But
Corrin fixes it as you like.
But there's a minor literature of people who turn to sheep farming, and of course they experience the difficulty of what that means because they don't know how to do it, and sort of previous representations of sort of sheepy practices end up becoming very important. So yes, I've chosen to emphasize the aestheticized sort of poetic pastoral.
And it ends with Chuck Cave.
Well, yes. I mean, I think my sheep are thoughts, writes Sir Philip Sidney, and Jack Cave reverses that. I'm tempted to say that actually one of the shaping things for the Jack Cave sequence is actually a sort of willful misreading of Golding's preface to the Metamorphoses, in the sense that he takes it's a reading the description of the golden world without any with completely it's a complete misreading of what the golden world entails. Yeah, definitely.
I mean, the thing that bothers me about the Jack Cade episode in terms of what you're doing with it is that, as I recall, Cade is actually more like a sheep than he knows. I mean, he's being manipulated. There is a aristocratic backdrop.
That's York 3-1.
He is being conscripted into, he's being herded in a direction that he's
not. You can play it that way, but it's a script, not a text.
But then, so my question is then, with response to the Raymond Williams stuff, okay, so you're looking for a proletariat, productive pastoral relating to sheep. And then you've got Jack of Newbury.
What?
I mean, that is sort of a pastoral of industrial relations, and since they happen to be spinning wool, it's got your sheepy connection. Fair amount of idealization.
What I'll own to is that, yes, in this paper I played Jack Cade. In other words, yes, I'm reading him as an allegorical figure of a literary critic today. In other words, I'd like to see...
banished.
Well, if you play too much with the archival politics, there's a chance that you'll fall foul of the P&T system and end up banished. I think my objection, in other words, if I began the paper by suggesting that an institutional self-analysis, in other words, an ecological modeling of how academic practices fit in with larger scale practices should be part of what happens when an ecology gets translated into the humanities as a mode of description. And if you don't do that, then essentially you're just conscripting a metaphor to do work that you don't quite understand its ideological function.
But now spell that out, because I missed that totally, the Jack Cade as literary critic.
I have a habit of doing that, and it's not a good one, of allegorizing a character as a methodology. So in other words, I'm setting up essentially a commonality between Haraway and Jack Cade. And your reading of the Cade sequence as Jack as sheep is precisely a very, very powerful and well-supported reading within our field. It's a reading that Roger Warren takes on fairly directly in his Oxford edition by refusing to print Act 4 with asides for the co-conspirators and producing a completely flat text, with the objection that what adding asides to the edition does is impose a reading which inclines towards essentially viewing Jack Cade's performance as something that he's not aware of. And this comes from Warren's scene of a production of the play that I won't remember when or where it was, where the play was performed very successfully with a sort of canny knowing, this is how we're going to actually organize a community with horizontal relations in which it's a parody of a royal we and a parody of the sort of ritualized practices of the fealty, such that Jack is aware of the kind of heteroglossic play around him, and that this stages a version of the play that you can't turn into carnival in a kind of reductive sense. But it's something very, it's an alternate community being imagined on stage. Jack actually, there are lines in the play which I'm going to forget, unfortunately, I'll not be able to summon in a longer version of this that I use, that show that Jack actually, there's a moment in Act 4 where he speaks directly to the point they're making about York's sponsorship of it, and he denies that. In other words, it's a sort of self-reflective moment, because there's no one who would understand that on stage at that moment. So there's some distance. So in other words, yes, I'm choosing, I suppose, to read Jack as not scripted by York. Okay, that's one thing. The other thing I do is that I think that Stephen Justice's book, which I'm going to forget now, on 1381, actually is a really useful, in other words, and Stephen Justice's book it's a reading of rebel writing practices in 1381 and their systematic obliteration in the chronicling of the Peasants' Revolt. And the archive of Poncho.